Hi, I'm Presence, I'm the host, and you're listening to the It Starts With Action podcast, where we talk all about action. Whatever goal you might have, the only way to get there is to take action. Yet I know there are people out there who have goals who aren't taking action. And to me, action means so much more than just doing the thing. To me, action means being aware, confident, tenacious, having intention, being open, and living in the present, as in now. And you're about to listen to an amazing action taker, someone who isn't afraid to take action to get to where they want to be. And my goal for each episode is for you to increase your level of action. So let's get into the episode, and don't forget to follow the podcast and leave a review after. Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of It Starts With Action. And today I am super grateful to get to talk to Christopher, who is, I will call him, the master of networking. And I'm just really curious about how everything started. I know that you started with doing journalism and you got your jobs through networking. So it'll be really interesting to hear about your journey.
Yeah. So for me, I grew up, for the most part, moving around the world. My dad was in the United States Army, and so he was deployed every 3 years to a new location, mostly outside of the United States for my duration of my life. So it was, you know, I kind of got a chance to see the world. I was born into it, seemed normal. It was nothing new to me. But as I got older, I started realizing that I was missing my friends. I started to get tangible evidence of what it felt like to leave things behind, especially during my high school years, because I left Kentucky in the United States and moved to Germany. And for me, one of the ways that I felt connected to not just back to the United States, but to any other place I'd lived in the rest of the world, was through news and media. And I found myself becoming obsessed with news, obsessed with what was going on in the world. And it made me capable of having a conversation with my friends who were still in the United States when I was in Germany. Because a lot of times I'd call and talk to them, we'd catch up about our own lives. But then naturally, you know, you'd want to talk about what was going on in the world. At least my friends did. And the only way I can fully have that conversation is if I knew. So I found myself, before I ever talked on the phone with a friend, or if which was rare back when I was in high school, because that cost a lot of money back then to call long distance. But the few times that I did, I was like, okay, let me have my game right. Let me read the news. So I'd always start reading the news, and I would watch news on, at the time, I don't know if it's, I'm assuming it's still around, but at the time when I was in Germany, I'd watch Sky One News out of the UK, and I was obsessed with that. And so it got to the point where when I got back to the United States, I tried to figure out what I wanted to do. I got back the middle of my senior year in high school. And so college was getting close. And I kind of had a few things that I wanted to do, but I settled on journalism. And I was really into music. So my whole goal was to get a degree in journalism to be a music journalist. But that's how I got into news. And that's how, you know, that started my journey. And then in college, I did a really intense journalism program at Emerson College in Boston, which is known for its media school. It's a television and film school. So I did that program. And right after graduating, I drove straight out to Los Angeles with the hopes of being a music journalist. And my first job was at CNN. And that's what kicked off my professional career. So that's how I got started in news.
And like, how did you find out about the importance of networking? Because I never knew what like networking was. I never knew that was a thing. Like, not like schools don't teach you about like building relationships, building connections. It wasn't until lockdown, lockdown, that I didn't have anything to do, that I went on LinkedIn and started just kind of trying to meet people that I didn't know. And then, you know, one day someone was talking about networking and I was like, what's networking? It's like, oh, it's like what you're doing right now. And I'm like, whoa, I'm doing, whoa. So like, how did you like get into, you know, realizing that building connections was what you were passionate about? Because that's kind of what you do all the time.
You know, that was a journey, because it's one of those things where you hear it about the importance of networking more so now than when I was starting out, because it was almost like the best kept secret. When I was starting out, they would have just said like, oh, I have a Rolodex, which I don't know if your age, if you know what a physical Rolodex is. Okay. It was actually this little unit that kind of flipped like a wheel, and it had cards on it, these cards. And the cards were basically people's addresses and phone numbers and info. It's your Rolodex. And you would just, it literally flipped. You would just flip and turn it to get, and it was alphabetical. Oh. It was in alphabetical order. Okay. It was crazy. So yeah, and you knew the importance of a Rolodex. You knew the importance of that. But networking still, when I was starting out, was business's best kept secret, besides outside of money, of course. And I started learning throughout time just how important it was. Naturally, I started doing it only because I like to have conversations with people. I like to meet people. And that comes from my upbringing. Two things, like I mentioned earlier, moving around and staying connected to people. Because if I didn't take people's information, I would basically, you know, lose them forever because I was moving around the world. So that actually came true for me, the importance of networking. And then also my mom, she was a big talker. Everyone knew her no matter where she went, no matter where she went around town. She always knew somebody, no matter where we moved to. Somehow, her reputation preceded her. People knew who she was. It was crazy, and you know, even when she passed away in 2008 at her funeral, there were so many people there who I had never met. So she was a big networker, not in a business sense, but just almost in a, you know, in a social sense. And I have a lot of my personality from her, so it's just something I always did. But it wasn't until, you know, my professional career progressed that I started realizing that tool that I had, that natural tool that I had. And when I became a music booker, when I left journalism and I decided I was going to be a music booker, what really got a jump started for me was the power of networking, was the power of putting myself out there and talking to people. And I saw the results I got. I mean, the industry opened up for me simply because I took the time to meet with these folks and to meet more people and to get them to make introductions. And you know, and when I say that this happens over time, this discovery, I say that because there was a point where I got complacent about my networking. And it's something I rarely talk about. And I think most folks don't talk about it. But I got really complacent where, you know, you kind of become a well-oiled machine and you have all these contacts and you think, oh, I know enough people. Or, and then you kind of get lazy and you get to a point where like, I know enough people. I don't need to meet anybody else. I got to that point and I kind of fell on my ass at one point because I started realizing just how much I no longer had that drive and hunger to maintain numbers. And I kind of learned a lesson from a this coordinator of mine who worked with me at a certain show that I worked on. And he was really good at always, no matter what, taking down everybody's phone number. And I saw how that worked out for him. And I kept thinking, I was just like, man, he's doing what I do, but even better. You know, he's taking my skill and utilizing it even better. I mean, and these are basically my contacts. These were contacts that I had that I was passing on to him in order to make the phone call to do his job, right? Because he had to kind of dot the I's and cross the T's. So I was giving him my contacts. But what he was doing was kind of growing those contacts. You know, just how they say that in order to make money, you don't have to save money, you have to grow your money. That's how you have to do with networking. You have to grow your contacts. It's a web. You meet one person, and no matter how influential they are, the people around them are the people who are even more influential. So you kind of have to stretch it. He was really good at doing that. So it was a learning lesson for me. And this was at a far point in my career. And I couldn't believe it. I was like, man, I dropped the ball. So after that, I started making it a point to, no matter what, and this is a big tip of networking that I always give people, I don't care who it is that you meet. If you have more of a minute long conversation with them and it's comfortable, take down their info. Take down their info. Because you have no idea just A, how you can help that person, how they can help you, or what type of friendship you could strike up, what type of business relationship you could strike up, whatever. You just have no idea at that point. But if you have more than a minute conversation with this person and it feels comfortable and you feel even an ounce of, oh, I might want to talk to this person again, take down their number. And it's something that you'd be surprised. It sounds so basic, but most people don't do that. So I do that with almost everyone I come in contact with. I don't care if it's a homeless person. He may not have a phone, but I'll be like, hey, man, I'll see you around. You know what I mean? I stay connected. And I'm telling you, that's probably one of the biggest powerful tools. I mean, one of the biggest tools ever.
Yeah. And you mentioned that some people don't do it, which, I mean, I can't go to any event I don't know now, maybe I've changed this year, but before COVID, I couldn't go to a room with people and like talk. So I know there's lots of listeners out there, especially like my generation, we're kind of new to all this. We don't really know like how to do it. And lots of us are kind of, you know, nervous, introverted, shy, and like don't really know how to put ourselves out there. So what tips would you have for us Gen Zs who know the importance of it, but not really sure how to start?
You know, it's funny because I think Gen Zs are at such an advantage when it comes to, I guess, the tools that you guys have to network, like LinkedIn, how we connected, right, on LinkedIn. Social media, and you know, I know that's categorized as social media, but you know, whether it's IG or whatever, I always think about, man, they're at such a great advantage. But then I've come to discover when I talk to a lot of Gen Zs, or just humans in general, not even, you know, because even people in my generation, Generation X, even they do this now. They've gotten very comfortable being behind the screen. They've gotten very comfortable relying on LinkedIn, very comfortable relying on other social media, instead of actually taking the effort and time to actually meet with this person. And I get it. I mean, look, we're in a fast-paced world. Everyone's busy. You can truncate your time by doing things electronically. And of course, everyone always eventually meets up with somebody at some point or another. But I find that out of convenience with people who aren't necessarily down the street from you, people don't bother trying to meet them or get on the phone, you know? Whereas I remember when I was starting out, I would make the effort, you know, living in Los Angeles, it's a huge city. Just to get from one end to the other, I remember when I lived on the East Coast, I can drive across to a different state faster than it takes just to drive across the city.
I've never been. I really want to go.
So you never want to travel. So I mean, oh, it's giant. I can't even describe it. It's funny because even before I moved here, I remember thinking, is it that big? Until you actually drive across the city, even without traffic, when you drive from one end of the city, which is the Deep Valley, to like the other end, which I would say in the longest case, Long Beach, you just see just how big the city is. But I just remember getting in my car and making the effort to drive across the city to meet with someone. And they would just say, oh, we could just hop on the phone. And I would say, no, let's actually meet in person, right? I have the friend I mentioned before, who was my coordinator, same deal. He gets on a plane. I'm telling you, that guy's, he doesn't even know that. I'd tell him, you've become the master networker. He will get on a plane and fly to meet somebody in another state, in another city. And it's he's utilized that, and it's yielded really, really great results for him. It's just, you know, I don't expect everyone to get on the plane, but just go that extra effort, go that extra mile to meet people in person. It's just much more endearing. You'd be so surprised what you can get out of people. Even just, you know, I have people email me and call me and ask me for favors, people I don't know, you know, which is fine. I never, you know, point my nose up at that. I never shy away from being honest and saying, I can't help you there, or making an effort for this person I don't know. It's just something I like doing because I remember how it was for me when I was starting out, or if I ever needed help. You know, sometimes when you rely on a stranger and they help, it's amazing. And then you become indebted to them. At least I do. But I think about some of the people who do hit me up that way on LinkedIn or whatever. And yeah, depending on how busy I am, I will help them. But I also think of the people pre-COVID, of course, who would hit me up and say, hey, do you have time for coffee? I'll make it as convenient for you. I'll come to wherever you work. I'll come, whatever, you know, just whatever I can do just to sit down with you. And they tell me the same thing that someone else could have told me on LinkedIn or over email or on a phone call. And man, whether I'm a sucker or not, I don't know what it is, but it's something about person to person conversation that it just yields better results. And I feel more I have the incentive to, whether it's help them or whatever they want from me, whatever, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? So I always tell people not to go around with your hand out, sitting down and meeting people all across the world, but it's just, you'd be so surprised when you sit down with someone, the difference maker is just being face to face. Cause I'm like, this sounds corny. Now I'm getting just too much into physiological thinking, but there is power in endorphins. Yeah. And there's this huge power in endorphins. And I know I feel it. And it's something I pay attention to. And it's just, I think if more people paid attention to it, they'd understand how important that is when it comes to networking. And that comes back to what I'm saying. Sit in front of someone, get them to chuckle once and laugh at what you're saying. And don't overdo it. And then you open them up. They start feeling good. You start feeling good. And man, you get the results.
That's interesting. So it wouldn't be, I guess, yeah. So even via like video, it's still different, to be honest. It's still different from face to face.
Oh yeah, it's all different. Yeah. Yeah. Completely. It's so funny too, because I've done Zooms with people, and this, again, this is pre-COVID. I remember doing video chat with people because I was working on this environmental conference where everyone who was a part of it, we were all working out of different cities. It was one of the first times, and probably ever, that I worked on a project globally like that for a year. And everything we did was over the phone or on video chat. So when I finally met these people during the event, to me, first of all, it's amazing how different people look in person. Right. It's almost amazing. I mean, for one, again, not to get into the technical side, your computer camera does a number on your face. You know, even if whether you look good or not, it's still kind of concave your face a little bit. And again, I'm coming off the beaten path, but the point I'm making is when you meet someone in person, and again, these are things that I'm attuned to because I pay attention to it. There's just such a different feeling. It's just like, oh my God, here you are. You know what I mean? Here you are in person. It excites me to actually be in front of somebody, especially, God, I'm sure after COVID kind of subsides, it's going to excite me even more to see
people. Yeah, I agree. I've met so many people that I like online and I've never seen them before. So I met one friend in person that I met on LinkedIn, and it's like, oh my gosh, you're real. It's crazy. Yes, happy feeling. I remember on the show you did with Tom, you talked about how you had a classmate friend in like grade six, and how that was an interesting story, and how like you're interested in like just like studying, you know, popularity, I guess. So like, I guess since the show, have you had any new insights about like the topic, or like, yeah,
you know, I don't know if I have any new insights, because I mean, but definitely it's something that I still, it's still just a big thing for me. I'm just blown away by it, and I'm blown away at how people can utilize the subject of popularity or kind of reinvent themselves, but not in a false or fake way. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, and I bring this up to friends and some other people sometime. And I remember I got an adverse reaction from one friend when I mentioned it. And they were just like, what is this? You know, just can't buy me love. And for reference, for anyone who doesn't know, or if you don't know, there's this movie from the 80s called Can't Buy Me Love. And it's been remade. Actually, no, that's my laugh. Okay, let me rephrase that. It's a remake. Can't Buy Me Love is a teenage movie version of Pygmalion and My Fair Lady, of course. But yeah, that story obviously has been remade over and over and over again. So my friend had referenced that, saying, so what, you just expect people to try to feign popularity and reinvent themselves and be something they're not? It's like, no, it's not even about that. It's just about evolving and just understanding what works for you and what works for other people. You know what I mean? And I think that's a big misunderstanding people have just about themselves. You know, they're like, oh, I'm never going to change. I am who I am. You know what I mean? But at the same time, they're like, hey, how do you network well? Or how do I, you know what I mean? Can you introduce me to this person? Or hey, how can I learn this? Or how can I learn that? Just basic common sense is you can't learn or receive anything, whether it's energy, whether it's information, if you're not willing to change. So that's why the subject of popularity is a big thing for me, because to me, it's an element of that, of being able to evolve and change. And popular, people hear it and they think about, oh, high school popularity, you know, and being top dog or being a cheerleader or something like that. It's not even that. It's just you'd be so, I mean, and it's funny because, and you'll come to learn this too, almost everyone who's popular in school, it's almost so cliche. Later in life, they just don't really amount to much compared to the people who weren't popular, right? And it's such a cliche. Movies beat that to death.
Yeah.
You will hear it from older people. And I can't tell you enough. I've heard it 1,000 times, and now I'm experiencing it and living it, especially catching up with old friends on social media. Mm-hmm. It is so true. I can only think of one instance, and I've been to many schools moving around. I can only think of one instance where the kid who was ultra popular and cool in school still has that air and presence. Just doesn't exist. But there's a reason behind it. And this comes back to my point of why I'm fascinated with popularity. It's the people who weren't really popular or who were considered nerds or whatever, because they were the observers. And they were the people who were understanding people, understanding what makes people tick, learning, because the person who was popular didn't have to learn anything. Everything was given to them, that energy, right? So these are the people, and you see it time and time again. You know, I don't want to get into celebrities, but almost every celebrity, a good chunk of celebrities, actors and actresses, if you look into their background, musicians, whatever, you will find that so many of them were considered nerds, or they weren't the popular kids, because again, they were the observers. And when you observe, you see what can be improved upon, what you can change. And again, change, not false, but just evolve into, you know, attaining whatever it is you desire to your advantage. You know what I mean? Not being schemish about it, but just observing and understanding the world. And you just, it's amazing. So that's why I'm obsessed with that subject. And I feel like I'm continuing to learn from it, whether it's from history, whether it's from celebrities that I speak of, or whether it's from younger people, you know, like yourself. I love having conversations with people and finding out what their life was in high school and what it is, you know, what they just came from, and, you know, and what their desires and plans are. And I immediately get excited when I meet someone who claims they were popular, but I get just excited when someone says, oh God, I was bullied and picked, because I think like, oh my God, okay, so what's their life going to be, you know? So yeah, it's something that I continue to be fascinated with for sure.
Yeah, no, I genuinely didn't really like the topic of communication. Yeah, I don't know why that word just found like communication used to be such a scary thing for me. And yeah, I struggled. Like the only thing that I changed that helped me go from like really not having any friends at school and to suddenly having friends was weirdly weirdly the podcast, because it was because of the podcast that I finally became okay with telling people more about like the things that I didn't want people to know the most, which was alopecia and anorexia. And once I don't know why, once I kind of told them about that, then I guess it's kind of the power of being a bit more vulnerable. That's kind of how I got to connect with at least some people through the podcast, and made like the best friends I've ever had, which is something I never thought I would I never thought I would have friends, but it was because I kind of was a bit more open, that because I used to be really closed off. So that's kind of the key lesson that I learned about building relationships.
Yeah. When you open up to your friends about it, did any of them know? Did people know about your alopecia, or was it a surprise to them? And if so, how did they react?
Yeah, it's funny because I don't know. Maybe because people mature. I guess in high school, in high school, it's basically what happened was I went to school, and then it was the summer, and then I lost all my hair in that summer. Thankfully, I don't know why, just God chose that period of time. And then I went back to school with a thicker wig. So it was really obvious. But I didn't want to admit that this was not my hair because I was so insecure about it. And then, yeah, people started to talk about it basically in like lunch. Someone literally just ran up and said, are you wearing a wig? And then just like ran out of like, and just left me there. So I was always really insecure about it. And I don't know, like in that school, no one liked me maybe it was just me that I thought no one liked me because of it. But then when I, like a few years later, I changed school and then on LinkedIn I started talking about it, they were surprised because they couldn't tell, which I don't know why. I feel like it's really obvious, but they couldn't tell. And then secondly, I think they kind of saw, I don't know, they were okay with it, which was kind of what, like, I was just really surprised. Like, I mean, now I'm more okay because more people are like, oh, yeah, that's fine. But for me, when I first heard the first person, my first friend who's like, yeah, okay. And then I was like, you're not going to run away from me now? Like, no. That's kind of like, oh, okay. So it's all safe. But yeah. Oh, sorry. I just like went on a rant there.
That's fine. It's perfect timing too because my dog started going crazy, which is why I'm muted. No, that's interesting. I mean, that's, first of all, first and foremost, I'm sorry you had to go through that.
Because of that, you know, well, if that didn't happen, then I wouldn't be here today. So, and what fascinates me most, sorry if I just keep talking, but, because he's a partner, what fascinates me the most is because of this, I became really interested in like interviews and podcasts. And I listened to, you know, Tom's story, Lewis Howe's story, Brendan Burchard's story, everyone who's like, create like just amazing now, like they've gone through something really like even worse, you know, Brendan Burchard like car crash, Lewis Howes massive injury, like they all went through something like crazy, like a massive shock, and then look at them now. That's why I kind of like I'm fine, I'm gonna be good. Well, I don't know, well yeah, I mean that's kind of my mentality over things.
You know, it's just, there's nothing that this world can throw at you that kind of shakes your resilience if, you know, you allow it to shake it, of course, which is fine. But what I like to do, and to your point, when you talk about Brendan and Lewis and Tom and some of their adversities and you compare it, although, you know, I'm not saying that everyone should compare, but I often like to think of the world's adversities and some of the things that people were going through. And I think, okay, wow, if that person came back from that, what am I complaining about? You know what I mean? And I know it's easier said than done for many people to just say like, oh, yeah, your problems, just move on from them. They're not going to kill you. You know what I mean? Bounce back. I know that's, you know, especially in this world and especially in the podcasting world, there's a lot of personal development talk and people speaking of moving on from adversity like it's an easy thing. So I want to acknowledge that I know that it's not easy for everyone, and when you're in a rut, it's exceptionally hard to move beyond feeling that way. So I do want to acknowledge that, but with saying that, what I do personally, I think about other people's problems, you know what I mean, and I think about gosh, grossly impoverished people, and you know, who just can't even find a way out of their lack of means. And then I think about the people who've been able to do it. And then again, my problems just become smaller and smaller and smaller. And I think, again, it's not sitting around and comparing myself to others. But when you do that, that creates empathy. So, and because when you don't and you lack empathy, and then suddenly it just becomes self-loathing, you know, like, oh, these guys bullied me. I had to go through this and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, hearing that from me, that sounds amazing. And I could already tell without you even saying that, that you have empathy. And I think in most cases, people who do experience bullying develop empathy naturally. Because, I experienced bullying also. When I moved from Japan to Kentucky, I was bullied. Like, it was out of control. I'd come home crying every day. And my mom would just tell me, you know, this is just a phase. You know, they're kids, you'll grow out of it, stuff like that. You know what I mean? And it just sounded, they were just words. It's like, what are you talking about? I get bullied every day. When I look back on that time and I say, oh, that made me stronger, I feel that it made me stronger because it helped me develop empathy. And I think once you have empathy for people, it's such a powerful, powerful weapon, a powerful tool. And, you know, almost everything seems endless for what you can do and what you can and will do simply because you have understanding and you feel for others. So, So I think you're on an amazing journey for sure.
But you too. So let's say there's someone listening right now who kind of, because I guess the topic we were kind of touched upon is like the idea of reinventing yourself. So can you like kind of share your experience when you had to kind of reinvent yourself? And if you have any tips for, I guess, someone struggling in terms of, we talking about it, like you said, it's not easy to get through any hard stuff that someone probably listening right now is going through, and they like the idea of, I want to reinvent myself. So what would your tips be for someone who is looking to change or wants to, like, doesn't believe they can change?
Yeah, I would say, going back to what I just said, be empathetic to others. Therefore, it helps you observe and understand others. I feel like as a country, and I've always said this, and I've always gotten heat from my American friends about this, but it's funny because I think, again, because my parents are immigrants in this country, we're immigrants, and because I grew up mostly out of the country before college, it helped me understand other cultures and other people. And then when I came back to the States, I started realizing, it's like, oh my God. And it wasn't until I went to college that I realized that most Americans don't travel, don't have passports. And it was a shock. I remember thinking, like, oh my God, but it helped me understand that, wow, we're not an empathetic nation, and people would get so mad at me. But now so many of my friends who would hear me say that for years get it now with what we're going through with our election and what happened in the last 4 years with Trump and the big divide of people here and people there, right? And the divide remains. It's because each side is just not empathetic to each other, no matter what you believe, right? And that was, you know, that was a very revealing period. And then you have these two sides who aren't willing to change or evolve or become different people. And for me, I think if you have empathy in another person, it helps you evolve and change because you start to understand them. Okay. And then even more so, taking it to another level, you just have to have empathy for yourself, you know? And this sounds corny, but you do have to have love and passion for yourself, because if you don't, it's hard to evolve or change. It's just almost impossible. There's just too many blockers. And whether it's because you're insecure, whether it's because you're down on yourself, whether if it's because you have imposter syndrome, which I struggle with to this day. To this day, I still struggle with imposter syndrome. And really badly. I mean, and it doesn't matter how much I achieve or how much I do. Even in the beginning, when you said I was a master networker, there was quite a bit. I was like, oh God, don't say that. But I'm not. but it's because this thing that I have. And then within the second of you saying that, I just accepted it. I was like, I've proven this. You know what I mean? And you know, my wife, she's one who will mention it to me all the time. She'll be like, you know, why don't you think you deserve this if I get some accolade? You know what I mean? Accolade. She just reminds me that I do deserve it. I've done enough to state that claim. You know what I mean? So if you don't have love for yourself, you can't change or evolve. You just need to understand that you have the power to do what you want to do. You have the power to change and evolve. So there's that. So yeah, having empathy for others, having love for yourself and empathy for yourself, and then just being observant. And this is, again, goes back to the first two, being observant to your surroundings. I mean, some people, I feel, walk through life, and again, whether it's an arrogance or what, they just walk through life without paying attention to their surroundings or paying attention to what other people are doing. And again, it goes back to my whole conversation about popularity, how the folks who never evolve historically, from at least speaking in my life, and you'll come to find too, are the people for the most part who were popular because they didn't have to observe and understand others or be empathetic to others. So I think once you have those things, you know, on lock, then it helps you definitely move towards, you know, change and evolving and becoming that better person. And until then, you know, with those blockers on, I mean, you wouldn't even begin to be able to do it at all. And again, it comes back to why networking and sitting in front of people are important, because you learn so much from others. I always say that, you know, I've had in the past 10 years, maybe, I don't know, more so 5 years, I've had younger people come to me and talk about, oh, like what advice do I have? What mentors, you know, should they meet? And 9.9 times out of 10, it's always someone older. It's always someone more established. And I get it. That makes sense. But at the same time, you know, I always tell them, you know, have lateral mentorship, or even people who are below you. Oh my God, I can't say enough how much I've learned from people who are younger than me, who see the world a different way, who aren't jaded yet, and they have new and fresh ideas. And again, that comes with sitting across from a person, becoming empathetic to who they are and what they are. It just helps you evolve and change.
That's interesting you said that. I guess one thing is, like I talk to people I know about, it's like we understand the power of like mentors and finding mentors, but at the same time, we kind of feel like we're always just like taking, like as a young person, what, like it's always about, you know, providing value. If you want something, then you need to think about what value can you provide. But as like a Jen said, you may not have, don't really have a degree yet, haven't finished yet, don't really have much skills that you can kind of make the ask, I guess. What's your thoughts on that?
So specifically, are you asking what advice do I have for someone who doesn't really have much to give? And then how do you give when you don't have much, but you don't want to take? And that is always tough. You know, I always tell people, don't come to folks with your hand out all the time, because especially if it's someone who's very influential, who has the power to help you, because you just have got to imagine that they've been asked so many times for help. I even think of myself, I'm not even at the level of, you know, Tom or other folks like that, or man, let's just go even bigger, Jeff Bezos, right? And I think of the amount of times I get asked for things out of the blue, people I don't even know. Just straight up, their intro is, hey, I need help. Can you help me? And I'm thinking, oh, what? I don't even know you. I'm trying to help my friend over here, you know what I mean? And I'm blown away by the hubris of, you know, some of these folks, right? And I can only imagine someone like Jeff Bezos, or, you know, or any other example, anyone who's just beyond successful, what they get asked all the time. And it must be daunting. And I know from just even people hitting me up because they want things from Tom all the time. And he doesn't even see half of this stuff, right? So I could only imagine what he gets, the people who get through to him. So I tell people, first and foremost, just, you know, pay attention to how you approach people and understand just how much that you're not the first person approaching this person and asking them for something. So that alone should make you reevaluate and think about how you make that approach. And again, you can come to them and say, hey, how can I help you? I'm always impressed when people say that. But then sometimes that's also daunting, because I know the second someone says, how can I help you? Then I know they want something. And I'm just like, oh, my God. You know what I mean? So it's really tricky how you approach it. But I think first and foremost, you just got to meet the person, right? And therefore, eventually you can get to a point to ask them something, or eventually you can get to a point where you can help them with something where they don't feel that you are scheming, you know? But I'm always impressed with people who, I mean, like, there are people who do it so well. I have a friend, I still joke about it to this day with him, where he met me and he didn't act upon his ask for, it was like a year. And then he finally admitted to me that the friendship had started because of that. And look, we genuinely did become friends, but I was just like, man, you play a long game. And I still laugh about it to this day. But it was great. I mean, and it was effective. He's like, well, I did that with everyone. And it's true. Look, sometimes you play the short game, sometimes you play the long game. I always tell people that. People sometimes just go for the short game. And if you just go for the long game all the time, you'll never get what you want. But you just got to pick and choose. You got to pick your battles. And I tell people that all the time. I mean, like, this sounds, not to get into dating, but same thing. I did that when I was single with dating. There was the long game here and the short game here. I knew that there would be this woman that, or, you know, girl, whatever, how, what age I was, who I liked, but maybe she wasn't into me, right? But in the meantime, I would date someone else and just be friends with this person, and who knows what it can evolve into, right? The long game, my wife, play the long game with her. We were friends for a good 2 years before,
like from the start. Dating.
And no, I didn't. To be honest, I didn't. But I did definitely start liking her before she started liking me. But I was aware. I was just like, man, if I just move on this and act on this, this could be compromising to our friendship. And I knew that that was the case. So it's just like, let me take my time. So in the meantime, I was dating people, learning how to date, because, you know, I always say learning how to date, because you do learn with each person that you meet. And in doing that, I was getting to know her more and so on. And I just kept thinking, okay, eventually things may blossom. And then when the timing was right, it all worked out. And then we started dating, and now we're married and so on. But again, so I apply that the same way to networking and to business and so on. You just got to play the long game in some places and the short game in some places. Just kind of diversify your attack and your approach. You just can't do it all the same way. So that's what I always tell people. And you can come with your hand out to some folks. You just got to pick and choose. Or you can just get to know someone first, whether it's helping them, interning for them, actually finding out what they want and how you can help them. Because you'd be surprised just how there's successful people. If some people just think, well, what can I provide them with? They have everything. You'd be so surprised how they can be helpful. Tom wanted to get into comics. As you know, he does comics. He did a comic with Steve Aoki. He's doing comics now. He knew nothing about comics. Nothing. He just knew that he wanted to get into comics. That's all he knew. That's all he knew. He asked me to get him into Comic-Con, which is, you know, San Diego Comic-Con. It's hard to get into. So Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con is a huge conference. It's a big conference that started out like the title. It's a comic convention where people would come and geek out and, you know, wear cosplay and costumes to comics and sci-fi stuff and so on. Time went on, it kind of got, it did get infiltrated by Hollywood and movies. And by movies. So that movie started using it as a platform to do an early promotion of what they had coming out. But it's still at its heart, still a comic convention. And Tom wanted to get into comics and he wanted to get into Comic-Con. So I had a friend who got him an exhibitor pass. He went there, knew nothing about comics, but he knew he had to meet the right people. So he went to all the talks, all the fireside chats, all the panels that involved comics and the right players. And he just sat there and he took the time to learn. And here he is, a guy who has the capital to kind of do what he wants, but still there was an avenue there where just anyone could help him. And he just started meeting these, when I say kids, young kids, either where they're just out of high school, or whether they were just starting in the workforce or they're about to leave high school. And from that, he learned everything he needed to know about comics from them. And then also the professions, right? The people who had been doing it for a while. And kind of word got out with some of the other younger people how they can help and serve. It's like, oh, there's this guy who is really successful. He sold a $1 billion business, but he wants to get the comics. You know what I mean? So there's always something. You just got to have your ear to the ground. There's always something. I'm sure, I mean, again, using Bezos as an example is ridiculous because, I mean, he's someone that's just really hard to get to, obviously. But I'm sure there's something, some desire he has that someone fresh out of high school or someone young or someone who's trying to get into an industry can help him with. And that's the cool thing about, you know, people starting out and work. You just have the freshest ideas. And I think that's why I had a frustration when I got out of college and I had to wait and earn pay my dues, which is fine. I believe in paying my dues, but I had such fresh ideas that I wanted to provide to the people who are already working. That's a long-winded answer and a long-winded way of saying just diversify your approach, play the long game with some folks, the short games with other folks, and you'd be really surprised what you can offer to those folks. So, you know, don't even worry about that. Just find out what it is. Do your research on the person.
I mean, it would be a dream to intern at Grit. In fact, they're crazy. But need to do my research. So A question I ask every guest on the podcast is, what does their next best version of themselves look like, and how do they plan to get there?
Ooh, wow, that's a good question. What does the next best version of themselves, of say myself, look like, and how do I plan to get there? You know, it's funny because going back to Tom, when I first met him, when I first started working with him, it was at Quest Nutrition. He was still at Quest, and he had started his show Inside Quest, and someone had suggested if he wanted to go bigger with the guest and he wanted to meet, you know, more influential people. Because when he started it, he was just interviewing a startup entrepreneur here and a startup entrepreneur there. But he wanted to meet some of the power players. So they suggested you just need someone who's a booker, who does this professionally, who's a networker, who knows people and who can make those intros. And that's how I met him. But when I went and met with him, I had a similar question, but it was more the typical interview question where it was, where do you see yourself in 5 years? That's the less eloquent way. Like, your question is amazing. But yeah, it was, where do you see yourself in 5 years? But the end game was the same. They wanted to get that answer. They wanted to see who they were hiring and if they were ambitious, whatever. And I remember thinking, okay, I can give Tom and Lisa the fabricated answer and say, oh, I see myself being, you know, an executive here, or, you know, to make the Forbes list or so on. You know what I mean? I can go with that answer. Or I can just tell them the truth. I knew just possibly would risk me not getting the job, but I went for it. It's teeing up. Basically, the answer still feels the same. I told them that in 5 years, I see myself being the best father that I can be. And they were just like throwing it back. And they thought, well, no, we're talking about work, like professionally. Like, well, what do you think? You know? And I could tell they were disappointed with the answer. Like, oh my God, I'm about to hire a slacker who cares more about his family than his work. I mean, which is fine, whatever. And instead of saying, oh, okay, they didn't like that answer, let me just give them that fabricated answer, I stuck to my guns. And I said, no, I know you guys want a professional answer, but 5 years from now, I may be here, I may be elsewhere, I may be doing a completely other profession. But the one thing that's going to remain is I'm still going to be a father. And it's going to still be the most important thing to me. And in order for me to have that drive to be the best father I can be, and in order for me to work hard and harder than I ever worked to be able to give my son the best life that he can have, and in order for me to be the best father I can be, I need to strive for that. And in that case, you're going to get the best person for me, right? So, and I remember just like, oh, okay. Yeah, like Lisa was like, okay, that's a good answer. And then I'm sure Tom was still like, but still, I didn't care. That was my answer. So my answer remains. And, you know, for me, where do I see myself, you know, beyond this, and how could I become my best self? It just continues. Everything I do at this point is, I have to be honest, it's for my family. You know what I mean? And this year was by far my busiest year. Cause I didn't, you know, for one, I didn't know what COVID, you know, the lockdown was going to do for, you know, my current work. But, you know, and I've always been an advocate for side hustles. That's another thing I have to say. Always have a side hustle. I've always been an advocate for that. But this year I had so many of them. And I did it again because it was for my family. And when I become the best person I can be for my family and the best father, then I will always be a hard worker. And to get to that point where I can be the best father, I'm going to be the hard worker. So the answer and the result is still the same. I'm going to work hard simply because I'm going to be
the best father. I'm just curious. I have so many questions. I'm like, where did that come from, you think? Like, how did having a child, was it, you know, was this kind of drive or passion before you had your son, or was it after?
You know, I've definitely always been a very passionate, hard worker. Always. Like, I've lost relationships in the past simply because I worked too hard and I obsessed. I've had a couple friends tell me, oh, wow, we don't see you anymore. Man, you're always working so hard. You know, why are you so obsessed with, you know, getting your job done or whatever, you know what I mean? I've had that. So no mistake, I've always been a hard worker. But it definitely went to another level when I had a kid. And I think that comes from, you know, my parents being immigrants and having to work harder than the next person because no one took them seriously or they didn't have the opportunities that the other person had. You know, my parents were immigrants, black immigrants who came to the United States in the 60s. And obviously, you know, the history of the United States in the 60s, if you're black, you know, I don't even have to elaborate on that. But on top of that, they were immigrants. So they were foreigners. So they had a double whammy. So they had to work their asses off for us. And my parents worked so hard for us, so hard. And it's something that, you know, I was kind of aware of when I was a kid, but man, when I became an adult, I really realized just how hard they worked. And to me, it's the most beautiful thing. And not that I'm just trying to be them, because it does come from a place of love, doing this for my son and my family and my wife. But it's not just love now, it's understanding. So I think that's where
I can't relate in terms of how children, but like, yeah, I come from a single parent background. So my mom works as like a supermarket assistant, which I know how hard she works. So I can definitely relate. How about like your side hustles in terms of, I know that other than, you know, working at Impact Theory, you also have your own kind of networking business. Kind of forgot the name. Connections First. Would you want to talk a bit about what Connections First is about?
Connections First is, yeah, when I was, the cool thing about working at Impact Theory is, the people I book and bring on the show, I mean, some of the most successful people in the world. And that's not lost on me. I take advantage of it. I grow my network that way. And in doing so, you know, there was one person I met. Basically, she said, hey, let's sit down and have coffee. I'm very curious about your background. I think there's something there for you. And I just remember thinking, why is she helping me? But she just did. And she basically asked if I ever thought of starting my own company. And I had thought of doing that. She was just like, just what you do alone, you can do so much more, right? And it could be much more lucrative for you. But I was honest. I told her, I was like, look, I'm not going to lie. I have imposter syndrome. I don't even really know where to begin with starting a company. I mean, I just laid it all out. I didn't care, right? She's like, no, cool. Let's address this. And then she kind of introduced me to this other guy who kind of served as a mentor. And I was already side hustling, but they were just like, your side hustling should be a business, right? So that's how I started. So the goal of Connections First is essentially doing what I already do. Everything I do is when I book people for whatever show I work on, whether it's something in the past or whether it's Impact Theory. You know, it's a form of connecting people, right? Tom, even the people who come up, Tom's a businessman. So anytime someone comes on the show, if he sees an opportunity, they connect and then they have a business venture, right? So why am I not utilizing what I'm seeing right in front of me to my benefit, my own self elsewhere? I've been side hustling for years, and I remember there was a point where I felt bad about side hustling and almost felt like a betrayal, but I no longer feel bad. And I always tell people, man, never, ever, ever feel bad about side hustling. Cause for one, unless you're an executive, you're never going to get paid what you should be getting paid. You know what I mean? Just everyone below the executive level is always going to be getting by in some way or another. Right. Secondly, no matter how much your employer will try to spin it, that you're part of the team, and you are. They're coming from a genuine place, but there are some who spin it. But even if they're coming from a genuine place, no matter how much your employer tries to spin it, you're still working for the company or working for them, and therefore you're working to build their dreams. No matter how they try to say, "Oh no, but you're part of this company," we're doing this together. No, it's still their dreams. It's their company, right? So taking that notion, you have to understand that you need to build your own dreams, right? So never be afraid to sell. You got to go out there and build your own dreams and do what you need to do to get where you need to go, whatever that is. So yeah, for me, Connections First is the ultimate side hustle. It's taking side hustling and putting it into one company. And my ultimate goal is to staff it with everyone else's side hustle. And it's going to be one big interconnected web.
Kind of like go all in on it.
Yeah, I do. I do eventually. And it's funny because even every time I hear that, you know, my mentor, when he's just like, well, when are you going to just do this? You know what I mean? I get nervous. Like literally, even talking about it now, I'm just like, oh God, if I do that, you know what I mean? Because it's one thing to be employed somewhere and then use that as support while you're doing the side hustles. But it's another thing to just go all in and make a vocation out of what you're doing. And look, honestly, I believe if I really just went all in, I'd be fine.
Okay, that
I'll be honest, COVID. Yeah, but you know what? A big scapegoat to say COVID and just only COVID. Yeah, even before COVID, I was still afraid. And what's stopping me is just natural fear. You know what I mean? I had 1 year in 2014 to 2015 where I didn't work pretty much the entire year, and that had never happened to me. I'd been working since I was 14. Prior to that lapse of in work. So, and it freaked me out. It was a traumatic year. It was a really traumatic year. And it just happened to be going into after the full year of my son's birth. So here I was still a new father and I couldn't provide for the family. And that, whew, man, I can't even tell you, that was a blow to the ego and confidence. And to be honest, I think I'm still recovering from that. That's part of it also. So it's not just COVID. But COVID did not help. I did have big plans going into this year. Like everyone, things were disrupted. But, you know, I'll eventually get there. I'll eventually get all in. And my plan is to whoever, you know, I have an allegiance to now, to continue to do things with them. You know what I mean? Not to reveal too much, but yeah, just that's, yeah, isn't it going all in doesn't mean abandoning what I have in place elsewhere. It just means, repurposing my focus.
I guess what I would love to is to just like surround myself with as many, ambitious and like growth mindset, like people as possible. So I guess like, are there any like key lessons that you've learned? Because everyone says, you know, who you hang out with the most is the five people you hang out with are kind of who you become in a way. So like, what are there any like insights or things that you've learned through, I guess, you know, through networking, through meeting so many people who aren't like, you know, who are facing their fears, doing all these big things? Is there anything, any insights that you think, you know, has made your life better?
Yeah, you know, I think that you're always learning. Always try to learn from these people. And, you know, not to always just rely on. And again, I know it's important. Look, I like to keep my close-knit network small. So when I hear that quote, you know, I hear it all the time about the five folks that you surround yourself with. And I know it's just almost just something that's just creating a saying and being tangible. So I know it's not literal that you should limit it to five people. But one thing I learned is you kind of have to have a revolving door of close-knit people when it comes to business and networking. Because the people who are close and around you and the people you surround yourself with can only give you their energy and time so much before they start thinking about moving on or they start being passionate about other things. So I think that's something that people forget, and it's something that I've learned over the years. You've got to have a revolving door of the close people around you. Because whether it's the people who work for you or whether it's people who's working that you're working for and people who are working around you, there's an element of compassion where you kind of become yes people. You know what I mean? Mm. Where you're not, your honesty kind of goes away. And it's ironic because the more you meet and know someone, you tend to be more honest with them. But then there's this weird thing that happens with people where they also develop courtesies and they're just kind of, you know, they're afraid to rock the boat because they know that drive and excitement that was there in the beginning of that friendship, relationship, business partnership, isn't as strong as it used to be because everyone's always moving forward. And that's the thing. Everyone's evolving. Everyone's changing. And it's the same thing with when people talk about marriages and how successful marriages work. It's almost unnatural for someone to think that the person you married when you were, let's say, 28, 30 is going to be the same person that you married when you're 50. It's not going to be the case. Everyone changes. And if you think that's how it's going to be, you're setting yourself up for failure. So you have to, within the relationship, adjust and understand that they're evolving and that you're evolving. So it's the same thing with business. But outside of, you know, who you're around, you just got, I feel like you have to have a revolving door of other people in order to grow and to be more successful. Because it's just, if it's the same people, no matter how much they're evolving, you're evolving. It kind of gets stagnant. So that's the big thing for me. And that's, and again, it's another reason why I side hustle, because, you know, there was one job I took and I worked on it for 10 years. So a few years later, when I was out of work for 4 years, I'm sorry, for 1 year, I realized, I'm like, wow, okay, I thought I had a big network, but it's not as big as I thought it was, because my big network was servicing that one job I had for 10 years, right? And that's when I realized, like, I got to have a revolving door. Like, I've got, and it's not even just like, oh, no, forget the people who are over here. No, it's just, you got to have that revolving door, because when it comes back around to the people who are over here, then you're realizing just how big your network is. So it's just, you know, don't just rely on those close-knit people. Keep growing that, you know, your pods, like your close-knit group of people, if that makes sense. I feel like I kind of went everywhere.
Yeah, that makes sense. Then, I guess that made sense. For you, in terms of, you know, so many people, so how do you struggle with kind of keeping in touch with so many people because you have, like, you know, limited time?
I mean, no, not really. I'm always checking in on people, and people are checking in on me. It's funny. It's an interesting question, because you do have a big network. I mean, that's a lot of people you got to keep in touch with. But again, it comes back to what I said earlier. You'll find just if we're talking specifically network from a business point of view, you'll find just how people take their big network for granted, like I did at that one point. They get lazy and they're not utilizing it. So it's giving you an edge if you actually utilize it. Check in on people, say hi to people, take the time. It's work. Networking is work. It doesn't just, oh, I got all these contacts just in case. No. You've got to stay connected. You've got to stay on top of it. And I'm telling you, you'd be shocked how many people who are great at networking become the victims of their own, you know, confidence. Again, like myself. I do as much as I can do check-ins, and as much as I can see how people are doing. And I can't tell you enough. I mean, a lot of the opportunities that I've gotten, like side hustles especially, have been specifically not because I've been looking for it. Like, I just do a check-in. Like, oh my God, I wonder how this person's doing. I see them on social. It's like, let me just give them a call. You know what I mean? Or let me see if they want to meet, you know, for coffee or whatever, just to do it. And then out of that conversation, I'm like, oh crap, God, I got another job, you know? And I say it like that because, I mean, there was a point I was just like, oh God, I'm working too much. I got too many side hustles, which isn't a bad thing. But it got to that point simply because I was always servicing the network and checking in on people. People get lazy and complacent. I mean, we see it all the time on social. I mean, again, I don't know if your experience is the same, but I can't tell you enough on social how, or just on LinkedIn. So maybe it is the same. Where you connect with people. People connect with you just to connect with you.
I don't know that.
I get it all the time. I can't tell you how many times I get a LinkedIn request. So many daily. And I'm like, oh, cool. This person sounds cool. And then I never hear from them. And I'm thinking, why did you connect with me? Why? Because I tell you right now, everyone, every single person that I actively connect with on LinkedIn, I'm going to utilize that. I'm going to pick their brain. I am going to get to know them. I'm going to become their friend. Whatever. If I take the time to hit click, request, let's connect on LinkedIn. It's not just going to be for vanity to boost my numbers. No. LinkedIn, it's so powerful. So that's, you know, again, you just got to have the edge. It's a great question, you know, and to answer your question in a very minor way to what I was just saying, yes, I stay connected. I'm constantly checking in on people and I'm constantly seeing what people are up to. And that keeps your network oiled.
Yeah, that's something that I'm not the best at with everyone. Sometimes it's like hard. But yeah, I was just curious.
Yeah, it's work. Even on a friendship level, I'm just like, oh, God.
So really catch up calls, and then I have university work. I'm like, oh, but then someone has to catch up. Yeah. I remember you also mentioned how, like, you are the importance of loyalty as a friend.
That's it's funny because you say, and some people are like, that goes without saying, but man, I live in Los Angeles, and that's loyalty is like the holy grail, because you don't find it too much out here, you know what I mean? Los Angeles is such a dog eat dog world, because it's the entertainment industry. Everybody wants what's best for them and wants what's going to help them. And they just step on people on the way up. And it sounds like something out of a book or a movie, but it is so true. It's disgusting. So the value of loyalty out here, it just goes such a long way. And people understand it and see it when it comes their way. And it's so valuable. But you just be amazed at again, that people just don't utilize that simple tactic. And again, it's not just a tactic. I'm not loyal for the need of being loyal and knowing that it's going to give me something great. It's just, you know, it's one in the whole of being empathetic, what I mentioned earlier. Because you won't truthfully be loyal to someone if you're not empathetic to them. You know what I mean? But it's just such a big thing. And it's a huge thing for me because I know how I feel when people are loyal to me. So in return, I like to do the same to folks. And like I said, when people detect that you're loyal to them, man, it's like the gift that keeps on giving. People just continue to give you things and help you out when you need help. So it's beyond me when people just do things for themselves and don't try to utilize the skill of being loyal, because it's one top five most powerful thing of networking.
So if that was number one, I guess for like relationships in general, like loyalty, you mentioned, I think before, like genuinely being nice, being yourself, being authentic. But yeah, that's the same.
Yeah. Good memory. Yeah. No, it's funny because being yourself and being authentic, I think I did separate those when I did mention it to Tom, because, I still think they're two different things. You know what I mean? Because if you are someone who's fake and you're fake by design and habit, you can be yourself and not be authentic. You know what I mean? So that's why I separated those. Because I know a lot of people who are themselves, but they're the fakest people in the world. Right? So I actively separated those two because I wanted to make a point of being authentic is really important, and it helps you become your better self, if that makes sense. But being yourself is a big one for me. I just always tell people that not everyone's going to be outgoing. Not everyone's going to be, loquacious. Not everyone is going to be the person that you expect out of a networker. But in order to get there, if you start with being yourself, therefore you're comfortable. And then once you're comfortable, it's just, you know, then it's cake from there. And then you can start working on the other things. You know what I mean? And then you can start opening yourself up. But just being comfortable with yourself is the start. Because it's, you know, it's funny because my wife even asked, anytime I ever do a Zoom interview or a Zoom conversation that's beyond mm-hmm. just a work meeting, I will take a shower, right? And you know, it's like if I haven't showered for the day in COVID times, I'll be like, okay, you know, let me take a shower, this and that. And then she's like, are you putting on cologne? You know, or, you know, just like a little spritz of cologne. And she's like, why are you putting on cologne? I'm just like, you know what?
Yeah.
If I smell good, then I feel good. And then I can, you know, it's still, yeah. you know, I'm not going to show up looking like a bum and smelling like a bum, mm-hmm. you know, if I'm meeting someone and I'm not going to feel good. And it's so important to me to feel good. So it goes back again to being yourself. Once you work on being happy with yourself and being yourself and you feel good, then you can be your best self. So again, that's why I do it. Why take a shower before?
That's good. I mean, I will like Christmas before I did this. So give a Christmas vibe. I would have, like, if we were meeting in person, I probably would have bought some food because I know you like free food.
Oh man, I'm telling you, I still do. You know what's so funny is I get so mad because my son eats so much. It's insane. He's always hungry. He always wants to eat. He never turns down food, and it drives me insane. My wife's just like, "Who do you think he got that from?" And if I ever complain about it to my friends, they say the same thing. They're like, oh, and you're surprised? It's so funny. It's amazing to see just how much, and again, I believe in, you know, obviously the history of your brain and genetically how certain things are passed on to people. And I'm understanding that more and more. I read about neuroscience, but man, I'm seeing it played out in my son. Just so many things about me. Just even just naturally too. That kid's a natural network. I'm sure you've been around enough little kids and toddlers to see that if a stranger comes up on them who they haven't met, and the stranger by meaning just a friend of their parents, whatever, it's just like, hey, how you doing? They like, they clutch their parents' leg and they kind of hide behind it. Yeah. You know, they're like, who's this person? And they're shy. That is not my son. That kid's just like, oh, hey, how you doing? And he's like, I mean, insane. It's nuts. A kid's a networker in the making. It's crazy. He can talk to anybody, adult or kid. I'm so impressed with him. So impressed. And it's the one thing I wanted from him before he was born. I was just like, I just hope he's a people person. And my friends are like, I hope my son's an athlete. I hope he's a great forward. I hope he's a great striker or whatever, you know, or quarterback, whatever they want from him. But me, I just want to be a people person.
But you've got lots of skills. Like, you know, just can all start from young, just teach him all about networking and 3 years old and just like go out there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, and real quick, in 5 minutes, I have a call.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
And I didn't want to cut you off and be rude, but I just want to give you a heads up. No, please. Look, if I didn't have a call, I can tell you this right now. I can tell you this safely. This would be like one of those podcasts. You ever go online and you're like, damn, this is a 3-hour podcast. What the hell? I will tell you right now that you would be sitting here thinking like, oh my God, I got to wrap this up.
I can listen.
This won't stop talking. I can go on forever. But I just I could definitely, and I'm enjoying myself too. So, but I just want to give you that heads up in case.
Yeah, I do. So I usually ask my ask guests for last time. At the end of the episode, I like to ask every guest is what action do they have for listeners to take after listening to this episode? Could be anything.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Okay. So that's a good question. By the way, fantastic questions. Fantastic job. I love what you're doing. And I think you definitely have I know you're working with economics, but you definitely
have I don't actually too, like, so, I have been questioning myself every single day, to be honest, about why I'm doing this degree. I'm not going to lie. But yeah.
Hey, that's normal. I question myself with journalism. It's like, why am I doing this? So I guess the action that someone can take after this, specifically if they're watching this, is to, I know it's tough now with lockdown, so I'll save the conversation of going out and meeting people in person. But after lockdown, go out and meet people in person. Definitely do that. But go through your LinkedIn, go through your past connections, everything that you've done, every person you connected with, and take the time, maybe an hour a day, to look at the person you connected with, ask yourself, why did I connect with this person on LinkedIn? And then send them a note. Research what their page is, ask yourself why you connected with them. Maybe it's something you wanted out of it. Maybe it's something you can provide, whatever. Send a note, send a hello, whatever. Just put yourself out there. And you'll be so surprised that by the end of that week, you'll come out with something, whether it's an opportunity or whether it's a way to help somebody or whether it's something that's going to benefit you in the future.
That's so definitely
that's
a
the
good
action
one,
I encourage. Yeah, I have some,
quite a lot connections that I really, that I didn't really check on. So yeah, definitely a good one. And thank you so much for coming. I've learned so much. How can people find you if they want to know more about you or if they can network with you, reach out to you, send you a LinkedIn request?
Yeah, you know, they can find me on Twitter, Finesse McDonald. Finesse McDonald, at Finesse McDonald, of course. LinkedIn, it's just Christopher McDonald. If you type in Christopher McDonald in Impact Theory or Connections First, you'll definitely find me there. And then, you know, I have an IG, but it's private and it's just more private, personal, family stuff. But if you want to be my friend, you can find me on there also.
So you just listened to another awesome episode, and I would say go and listen to another one, but no, don't even think about listening to another episode. Go and take action now. And if you want to share with me what you did, then feel free to tag me on a post on Instagram at presence_instarts_with_action. And yeah, until next time, guys. And remember, it starts with action.